This episode of Nerd and Tie is sponsored by Zach Fisher. Zach Fisher is an awesome person and slightly better than you because he decided to sponsor an episode of Nerd and Tie. You too could be this awesome by going to nerdandtie.com and clicking on the sponsor information on the right or on the top bar. It's pretty great. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we go through the good, the bad, and the unexpected. We've got renewals for you, we've got cancellations, and we've got news that we just didn't think was going to happen. Also, we've got our reaction to No Brand Con. I'm going to ASEN, and oh my god, so many letters. And welcome to Nerd and Tie. I am one of your co-hosts, the splendiferous and amazing Trey Dorn. And joining me, as always, is the static yet excellent Nick Izumi.
Grant me the power to make revolution.
And the brightly colored and appropriate for the quote that Nick just said in pink, Firsters.
Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. Come on in, won't you?
Oh, man. It's been a... We've had a busy fortnight.
It's been nuts. Like, you know, you point out how full the mailbag is. Like, we've got to wait till the end of the episode. I don't think people realize just how much mail we have in this episode.
Oh my god!
Like, it's unbelievable. We're gonna complain. We're never gonna complain about you not sending us letters ever again.
I feel so well thought of, you guys. I'm actually enjoying having a nice full mail.
It is amazing. It is.
It's cool.
All right, so. Also,
no, it's been busy. It's been a busy couple nights.
And for those of you who did not tune into last weekend, we actually did an Avengers Age of Ultron special. So we're not going to discuss that this episode. All of our thoughts on that are back there. If you have seen Age of Ultron, you should do that before you listen to the special. But if you want to know our thoughts on the film, that's where you'll find them. We're not going to...
And if you want to hear what it's like when we try and fit six people into a single podcast, that too.
We are never doing that again. We are never, ever, ever doing that again.
It was an experiment, not unlike Ultron. We're not going to try it again, but it had good intentions.
So my computer was not happy. I had like, oh my god, there were so many technical issues that episode that. Like, besides the one that I mentioned, like, while I'm trying to fight and do that, I had to replace a piece of equipment because of that episode.
See, Trey's computer actually tried to kill him and maybe other members of the human race.
So that last episode might have been, like, the Ultron. It really was Ultron in more than one way.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's... Before we continue lamenting about the tribulations of our previous installment, let us move on to this new splendiferous one in all of its beautificent glory. All right, so starting out, let's talk about some good stuff.
Yeah, I like
the
good stuff. Everybody loves good news.
The good stuff. Well, we have lots of excellent news. First off, we've got some great renewals. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been renewed for a third season.
More humans.
And along with that news, we also found out that Agent Carter has been renewed for a second season, which is amazing.
Which is good, because a lot of people didn't think it was going to happen.
No, it's myself included. I was really nervous about it. It's like Agent Carter has been on the rocks. It had an okay first season ratings. The show itself was excellent. I loved every minute of it.
And it was well done.
But it's the actual ratings were kind of on the bubble. So it's a really great show of faith that Marvel has decided to bring it back. Obviously, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were excited about because for those of you paying attention, like really this whole plot this season is setting up for Civil War. If you pay really close attention, so I'd like to see that keep going up to Civil War.
And Inhumans.
Inhumans, too.
I'm really getting into the Inhumans recently, so it's been...
And let's be honest here. I mean, Marvel owned by Disney, who also owns ABC, they're not going to let these two shows go. Like, at this point, they've got a lot invested.
They're not
going to
let Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. go anyway.
They're definitely not going to let Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. go just because of how much they've invested in tying everything together with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, this last episode, or the episode before after Age of Ultron, excuse me, that tied directly into the whole thing that happens in Age of Ultron at the end over Sokovia.
Yeah. It's actually what I did like is that the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode, like, only barely, like, they only did a small tie-in to the movie. Like, it's a necessary, they explain a necessary plot point,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, oh, that, yeah, but it didn't derail the plot. It's,
no.
I'm not gonna lie, I kind of liked season one's tie-in more when Winter Soldier basically made the plot kick into overdrive, but.
Well, they had to at that point. I mean, it was
well,
Agents
yeah, but
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I enjoyed that a lot. I mean,
yeah,
it's still a good show. I'm glad it's gone.
It's and I also sad to say though that the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff that had yet to actually ever get a title that was going to star Adrian Palicki and Nick Blood as Mockingjay and Hunter, they've decided to scrap that. They're not going to make the spinoff, but the two actors will remain on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So.
It is what it is.
It's just that Adrian Palicki cannot get a show
on their own. No,
on
her own.
She
has not been lucky. To be fair, the Wonder Woman thing was the Wonder Woman thing was not her fault. That was just an awful interpretation of Wonder Woman.
She was not the problem in that. At no point was she the problem. The script she was given was horrendous, but
she made it work.
What she could with it.
So. So the other good news that we have is, of course, that iZombie has been renewed for a second season by the CW. And considering we're barely into the first season, like we're only like halfway through the first season, it's only been on since I think March or April.
It's a good zombie show. I mean, it's kind of a fun departure for most zombie shows.
I haven't watched any of it yet because it's on at the same time as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh man, and that's one of the shows that has episodes disappear after a while off of Hulu.
Yeah, I know. I really should give it a shot, but I haven't had a chance to.
I think it's one of the best shows that. Is on the CW right now.
Might be one of the smartest shows I think I've seen.
Well, it's written by so it's adapted from the Vertigo comic, obviously, but the guy doing the show is Rob Thomas, not to be confused with the lead singer of Matchbox 20.
Who was also with Carlos Santana during Smooth, which is one of the greatest songs ever written.
Wrong Rob Thomas. Rob Thomas, this would be the Rob Thomas who created Veronica Mars.
Okay.
And so it's you get all of his – he's very well at, like, witty, snappy dialogue, and you get all of that.
With zombies.
It's like if Rob Thomas had written Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it really – so
– Again, not Rob Thomas good. In Matchbox 20.
Right.
Okay, I'll
– Right. Although Joss Whedon did appear in a cameo in the Veronica Mars series because he was a big fan of Veronica Mars. So
we'll see him in iZombie. Yeah. That'd be pretty great.
I'd love it, but no. So the cast is really solid. The show's really good, and
it's got a second season.
And it's getting a second season, which is great. Which is great because you know
we need more good, like funny, smart television. I think.
Well, also the secret is that if you want to get renewed, you want to be on the CW because they only canceled like one genre show, and it was one that none of us ever watched. Like, I didn't know it existed until I found out it got canceled. It was something about people looking for, like, the Horsemen of the Apocalypse or something like that. And, like, I didn't even know it occurred. Supernatural.
And I thought it looked hilarious.
Yeah, I never saw it. I didn't know it existed until I found out it got canceled. But literally every other genre show on the network got renewed.
CW's not even ordering pilots anymore. They're ordering shows straight to series now at this point.
Well... No, it's. I mean,
yeah, the new super, the Brandon
Legends
Routh
of Tomorrow.
One, Legends of Tomorrow. That didn't even have to go to. Pilot.
I forgot to put that in the rundown.
Legends of Tomorrow straight to series.
Well, to be fair though, that's a spinoff of two existing series full of character. Like, oh, there's only one character on that show who isn't like there's like three characters on that show who aren't pre-existing on shows written by the same guy. Like it's,
yeah, but it's still pretty impressive that at this point.
Yeah, Legend.
In the case
of
Hawk Girl, people know who she is.
Yeah, we should mention that Legends of Tomorrow did get picked up. That's that unnamed, confusing Arrowverse spinoff that we've been talking about for a while. And it
they
did
were
get
hinting at it Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that the reason why it finally makes sense is because we know that Arthur Darvill, who people know from Doctor Who,
is playing a time traveler.
He's playing Rip Hunter, who's assembling a team from across time, and that's how they're going to include a character who has been dead on Arrow for a little while.
That is my favorite name, by the way, Rip Hunter. That is just like the most like
pulpy like, name ever.
Pulpy isn't name at Rip. I am Rip Hunter, Private Eye.
No,
isn't
Rip Hunter.
That a Booster,
time traveler.
Booster Gold's son in the comics.
I'm not familiar enough with that corner.
I think
DC
it might
universe.
Be actually.
Yeah, I think he's Booster means, Gold's
we might
son.
Be, we might be getting a Booster. We could get Booster Gold showing up. Rip Hunter. There we go. That's
so. That's.
I'm good with it because more Brandon Routh is always good.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Plus Hawkgirl.
Also that time travel element will let us like just toss in Hawkgirl being fully established as a hero without mm-hmm. having to give her a full intro.
And plus we've been getting other nice little we get other hints at what could be coming in the future, like Flash and Arrow have been hinting at there might be metas outside of Central City, so they could be all over the place.
I would hope so.
We also get to see Arthur Darvill rocking a kicking beard. So that's what I'm excited about.
Man, so that's the good news, everybody.
By the way, Nick, he is also, he has Booster Gold's son. So
okay, good. I was right.
Yep.
Isn't it also worth mentioning Supergirl got ordered to series, too?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. The reason why I didn't bring it up, okay, Supergirl got ordered to series, but we all kind of knew that was going to happen because CBS would have faced massive financial penalties if they hadn't with the way it was a push pilot. So if they hadn't, it would have to have been – like Supergirl would have had to have been so awful not to get picked up, and it's written by a good team. So
it would have to be Wonder Woman awful is what
yeah
you're
no
telling
it's
me.
Okay. so that's why yeah that's
cool.
Just
okay
it's gonna be good. So lots of good things happening, lots of good genre shows shaping up onto the future,
but
we're gonna see a lot of good things.
But there's bad news, isn't there?
Does
Nick,
have to be bad news.
Oh man, there's always bad news. Couple of shows are getting canceled, and in one case, it's no surprise, but I know Trey is going to be disappointed. Helix has been canceled. Trey, neither of them watched Helix, and how did you describe it to us?
Helix is literally an insane show in the sense that I believe that watching it simulates the feeling of having lost your mind. See, Helix got canceled after two seasons. So the first season was really presented as though it was going to be this claustrophobic bio thriller. But by the middle of season two, someone's chopping another immortal's head off with a sword, and it's the future, and there's magic honey. Helix is like, I'm not kidding. Like I literally started belting out like. Princes of the Universe at the top of my lungs when the guy from Wings got his head cut off with a sword.
Wow. That is the greatest sentence that has ever been said on this show.
The best part is the guy had been in prison for 30 years and this big build up to getting released, and then like 5 minutes later he's getting his head cut off. It's like so like Helix what was crazy in like the most literal sense of the word. And I loved watching it for the insanity, but it was in no way a good show. Right. It is, however, the first casualty out of the shows put on by Sci-Fi Channel in their attempt to do more harder science fiction.
Okay. Well,
it is the first casualty of that generation of shows. So, yeah. But we'll go back to Nick now, as he has to talk about things that
Nick
people care about.
As Nick needs to talk about this so he can actually he can get some closure.
We'll put up the photo of you in cosplay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I need some closure here. Yes, unfortunately, despite some heavy campaigning and Daniel Cerrone being really trying to keep all of us Hellblazers optimistic, Constantine has been canceled by NBC. It is official. It was a long, hard fight. We did our best, and NBC still canceled it.
Well,
not a huge shock because it's NBC.
And Daniel Cerrone is trying to shop it around to other networks. He's not giving up. Sci-Fi is probably going to pass, but he's trying to also like take it to streaming networks. So there's still hope, but not much. You
know, it worked really well on Netflix.
You know, it would work really well, Yahoo Screen. No,
My God, right?
I know they've even drummed up a little bit of support from other people on the celebrities in the internet community. I know, no real shock here because he loves crossovers more than anything, but Stephen Amell, of course, jumped on the Save Constantine train with, I want to do a crossover. Bring the show back. It'll be Queen and Constantine getting shit done.
Oh my God, wouldn't that break reality to try to put Constantine in the Arrowverse? Like,
they would have so much to explain. They would have so much to try to explain.
Like, like I am glad that the X-Men is separate from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I believe that the dark side of the DC universe works better separate from the normal superhero genre universe when at least you're putting it in TV.
There are people who got it to work in the comics, but those people were Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman. So
you have to remember Hellblazer originally, it was a Vertigo comic, so now it does. Now it does. The New 52.
But he was originally a Swamp Thing character, and Swamp Thing was in the regular DC universe. Then he got kicked out. Actually, the first two volumes of Alan Moore's run, the first three, are heavily set within the DC universe. Lex Luthor sends Swamp Thing to space. This is a major part of the Alan Moore series.
The sentence, Lex Luthor sent Swamp Thing to space, is my favorite thing I've ever heard.
And by extension, that means the Hellblazer stuff also extends to Sandman, which is also very closely tied with the Swamp Thing Hellblazer thing. So Vertigo is being part and not part of the DC universe is rather confusing when you go back.
That's very confusing. But, but I will say that, when people justify things in comics, I think it's easier for some reason, because I think there's a level of, I think there's a suspension of disbelief people are willing to do in comics that they're not willing to do in other mediums, because comic fans want to rationalize everything. I know this. Well, no, comic fans are already used to having to rationalize insane stuff because they've got like 30 years of like 20 different writers that they're trying, you know, that they've got to try to like make. Is that really what the character's like? Sure, it is now. You know, because when you've got a constant cycle of writers in a comic in the universe and they're all trying to mesh together, comic fans are just used to rationalizing that, while people watching television series are much more used to like a cohesive universe that makes sense.
Regular Joes are still signing up for Hydra, even though they know they might have to fight Thor. You know what?
What moron signs up to work for Hydra? Like, I understand the people forced to work for Hydra.
Maybe they have great benefits.
No.
According to Deadpool, they have great benefits because that's why Bob, Agent of Hydra, joined Hydra.
Like, maybe, if I'm sitting there and I'm looking at S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra, and I'm like, well, gosh, I joined S.H.I.E.L.D., but Hydra is offering a little bit better of a 401k.
Oh, God. Let's.
Like, I don't know. I'm going to probably lean towards that because that's just a little bit more
fur,
in my pocket.
Fur, we've got tons of crap this episode. We should move on.
We need to keep going.
Let's all be sad that Constantine is canceled, and let's hope it finds a home on, like, another network or streaming service.
For once, I'm going to be the hoper and dreamer. I'm still going to hold out. I'm not giving up yet.
I agree with Trey. It should end up on Yahoo Screen because Yahoo Screen has been nothing but great.
Yeah, I mean, between Other Space and Community.
I just finished Other Space.
I haven't watched All Saints yet, but it actually looks kind of funny.
Other Space was fantastic.
Other Space. Well,
Yahoo Screen is becoming like, has gone from, what even is this, to, wow, all sorts of great shows.
Well, it's still the worst interface ever.
It's
like
terrible.
The worst website and the worst like app to watch
mobile,
shows.
On mobile, I haven't been having issues with it.
So. I have not been having issues on mobile. On the Roku, it's just so the Roku app crashes when you search. So if it's already like issue. On the list of channels like that pop up by default, you're not going to find it on the Roku, and that sucks. Because like other than that, it like once you get it, oh yeah, and Other Space does this weird thing on the Roku where anytime they do the warp effect, it screws up the video for like unless you like rewind a little bit.
Weird. Well, Trey, you know, speaking of space comedies,
we might as well
go into the unexpected portion of this. With the first thing that Red Dwarf is getting an 11th and a 12th series. It's official.
Yay.
It's happened.
Yeah, it's been rumored for a while, but now we've got release dates.
It's Megan awesome.
That is true. The release dates for Red Dwarf series 11 and 12, and I'm really sorry they don't have this in front of me and can't list it off the top of my
2016
head.
2016 and 2017. That's all I know.
2016 and 2017. So starting next year, we're going to get some new Red Dwarfs. Thank you, Trey, for the assist on that one. This is good. We need more sci-fi comedy out there, I think.
Yeah, it's Craig Charles actually quit Coronation Street so he could do Red Dwarf Series 11. So it's he's quit his regular gig that he kept through the 9th and 10th series. So
it's going to be good. So be on the lookout for another great space comedy, a continuation of phenomenal space comedy next year.
In the chat room, Arkham, I said Constantine on Red Dwarf. I think that could work. I'm going out on a limb here and saying I think that could work.
Someone draw that.
But it's
Red Dwarf
series 11 and 12 is really exciting. They've been trying to get these made for a couple of years. Red Dwarf is this insane thing. Now it's on the Dave Network in the UK. And it started out on the BBC, but now it's on Dave. Red Dwarf has this bizarre history where it's been going since the 80s, but it's only now going to have its like 11th to 12th series, but it's never officially been canceled. Like, that's how...
That's phenomenal. That's so great, though.
It's insane. Like, it's like every couple of years they make like... Like, you'll get a burst of, like, one or three series, and then, like, nothing for, like, 5 years. And then, like, another burst, and it's... You know, the funny thing is that if you go and you look at current photos, Chris Barry, who plays Rimmer, is the only actor who's, like, really visually aged out of the crew, because Robert Llewellyn, who, like, joined in series 3 or 4, I want to say, as Crichton, he took over the role of Crichton, from a guy who had guested in one episode. Like he's aged, but he's behind a foam rubber mask. But Craig Charles and oh my God, my brain is blanking on the actor who plays the cat. But neither of those actors has visually aged all that much. Chris Barry, though, looks a lot older. And it's only funny because Chris Barry's playing the only character on the show who's not supposed to age. And he's the only one who has.
Yep.
Danny John Jules. There we go. God, why could I not remember that? Yeah. So.
Oh dear.
So that's I'm excited that the boys from the Dwarf are back. And you know, I got to wait till next year, but that's better than you know how long I had to wait between like say series 8 and 9. Or series 6 and 7. Series 6 ended on a cliffhanger. We sat there for years watching our characters get blown up. Like everyone was dead. Series 8 ends on a cliffhanger that they just never resolved when they came back. Series 9, they're just like, the characters are there and they're fine. And a whole bunch of stuff happened you just didn't see, is the expectation. Anyways.
Who needs resolution?
Speaking of weird things on TV.
Yeah, how about this?
Cyan Worlds has announced that the creators of Myst, that a Myst TV series is being created for Hulu.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to point out that I think this specific story, this news, has sparked the most discussion of any story the Nerd Guy has ever posted.
Well, it's okay, so... We know it's going to be written by Evan Dougherty, who did the screen adaptation for Divergent, and produced by Matt Tolmach. But Cyan Worlds, the creators of Myst, are involved in the show, but that's literally all we know. We don't know when it's going to be set, who it's going to feature, and there are so many different directions this can go. So that's why it's generated a lot of discussion on our Facebook page, not really much on the website, but on the Facebook page, because people keep trying to figure out what the hell they're going to do with it, because there's so many things they could do. It's, are we going to have the main character or characters in place of the Stranger, which is what the Stranger is the name of the player character, who is ostensibly supposed to be you playing the game when you play the Myst games. And I think that you could do Myst straight as a straight adaptation if you just made it like three people getting pulled into the Myst book. But there's also this whole other mythology with Myst. There are these novels that are prequels effectively to the first Myst game that explain the story about, you know, Akinar and Cirrus and, you know, all that crap. And there's also the rich tapestry of the storyline of all of the Riven and Exile. And I don't think you're going to see any of the games like Exile that were produced by EA. Like, those story elements probably won't be referenced too much. But but there's like such a like, but also
you
can't
really go anywhere.
Yeah, it's well, and also it depends on how true to the video game mythos they want to go. Because they could in theory do a like, because if you're going to do a straight remake, do you actually set it so your protagonists come from like the 1800s, which I think is the real world time associated with when the first Myst is happening? Because Uru put a lot of that in perspective.
Maybe not.
The Myst mythos, for those who have no idea what I'm talking about, is very complicated when you look at the greater context.
You can find a lot of charts out there that explain it.
Well, it's because most of the game is meant to be unraveling the history, and so you can sit there reading books in the game for like hours, you know, figuring out what's going on, and that's just in the game.
Or you could be like me, who I think played Myst once for about an hour, and was like, "This is a lot of walking around.
I'm reading
stuff." I'm going to go back to playing Tomba now.
Okay, I don't have...
Throw pigs around.
I just recently replayed Myst like a year ago, so...
You know, I don't know. I've never played Myst, but it sounds an awful lot like what I did during my weekends as a history major. I just wandered through quiet places, reading microfilm, trying to figure out the history.
If you were my age or older, like, if you had a CD-ROM computer in the mid-90s, Myst was the game that everybody had and everybody played. And you can beat it in 5 minutes if you know what the code is. Oh, man.
I want to play it, mind you. Like, it sounds interesting to me. But that's because I enjoy going to libraries and disappearing for several hours looking at microfilm.
Real Myst is available on the iPad, which is an adaptation of Myst where they turned it from like the still images into using a first-person shooter engine.
Huh.
So you can actually walk around the whole thing. I have it purchased, so I don't know if you could always be downloaded to that iPad that you're holding in your hand right now, Nick.
Maybe I will do that. That sounds like a good idea.
Because I played it on that iPad that you're currently using.
Oh, okay. Even better.
So I know it works.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I recommend playing Myst only because it's just it's really fun. And we had to play Myst in the days before sites like GameFAQs. So you literally, like, some of those puzzles are really complicated. So I will say you might look up a walkthrough to get through parts of it, because there's a couple parts I would have never figured out without a walkthrough.
So Trey admits here on NerdandTie.com that he is in fact a cheater when it comes to video games. How about that?
Hey, man.
Doesn't have the skills it takes.
Doesn't have the skills to pay the bills, yeah. I guess.
Or maybe, like, was lazy and on vacation and getting really frustrated with a puzzle.
Well, maybe you should have tried harder, Trey.
And it was a goddamn 20-year-old game.
A little bit older than me.
Speaking of old things that maybe shouldn't come back, although
is this the carnival? Are we taking a trip to the Carnival of Sadness? I'm just gonna.
We're here in the DC Carnival of Sadness. What wonders does it hold today? Well, don't worry, everyone. Your nightmares have come true. To yourself, well, we're getting a Frank Miller Batman movie, and that's making me have all sorts of questions about whether certain parts of the 80s were even worth it. But here it comes. That's right. Dark Knight Returns 3 has been announced.
Nick, Frank, that's even better. What's the subtitle, Nick?
Frank Miller's back in the seat. He's drawing, he's writing, and he's calling it The Dark Knight Returns, The Master Race.
Wow. Man.
There's no way he's not doing this just to piss people off.
Oh, this is so bad.
There's no way that this isn't just trolling at this point.
This is so bad.
This is amazing.
I have not been secret about my hatred of Frank.
Look, Dark Knight 2 didn't need to happen. DKR 2 did not need to happen.
It was horrendously bad.
DKR 3 really doesn't need to happen, Frank.
We don't need this. On a list of things we don't need, you've got an Ebola outbreak at number 1. At number 2, probably like another horrible disease to happen. Number 3, Dark Knight Returns 3. And following that,
another season of Gotham, but I guess we're stuck with that.
Well, we don't know about Gotham yet. We haven't heard news.
But oh my god.
Why is this happening? You know, the thing is, like Trey has said in the past, the original Dark Knight Returns is an important book. I'm glad it exists. I am glad it exists.
It's when Frank Miller was only a little bit crazy.
But there are definitely problems with it. Huge problems with it. And then he did this sequel that was terrible. That was like the textbook definition of terrible. And now we're doing another one?
Well, it's DC Comics reached out to Frank Miller to make it. That's the amazing thing, is that this wasn't Frank Miller saying, I've got a great idea for a third Dark Knight Returns installment, like comic. No, this was DC went to Frank Miller. Which is why Frank Miller's got like a co-writer, I think.
That's just literally going to be somebody there to slap the pencil out of his hand every time he's about to write down the word prostitute.
Whores!
I just don't, you know.
If I had a fedora, I would put it on and do my Frank Miller impersonation, which is just me going, whores! 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 Whores!
With a heart of gold.
Or due just whores.
It ties into one of the letters that we have in the mailbag. I have some other thoughts about DC and Batman that we'll get back to later, but come on, DC. What are you doing? Again! What are you doing? Are you drunk?
Yes, they are.
What would this even be about? I'm trying to figure out.
I believe that Batman is going to declare himself Führer of Gotham. And
how is that any different from the Dark Knight Return?
Well, he's gonna have a little mustache now.
Okay.
And Brian Azzarello will co-write it with Frank Miller to make sure that Frank Miller just doesn't write the word whores 20 times on a page.
What is that? What else has he written? I need to know this.
Make sure that he writes it more times.
Brian, I feel like I should, like, I know the name, but I think he's worked on Wonder Woman. He did 100 Bullets for Vertigo. He was the writer of the relaunched Wonder Woman series in 2011.
Okay. Oh, he did some Hellblazer stuff.
Yeah, he did the he did the one of the before Watchmen prequels that were completely unnecessary.
Oh, great, wonderful.
He wrote the first three issues of Flashpoint Batman Night of Vengeance.
He looks like the kind of guy you expect to see when you find out that someone is a comic book writer.
Oh,
that's true. He's got the beard and...
I mean, if you imagine Frank Miller hanging out with a guy...
It'd be that guy.
That's what you imagine. I don't know. He's not a bad writer, actually. It's he's done some good work. It's just that, you know, he worked on Hellblazer.
He did quite a bit of work on Hellblazer, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the problem is not Brian Azzarello. The problem is Frank Miller and the Master Race.
Good God.
See, Brian Azzarello's job is going to be like going, that's a little bit too overtly National Socialist.
Right. No, well, you know what? DC probably came to Frank Miller and was like, hey, can you write this? I could see Frank Miller like wringing his hands like, oh, they want a third Dark Knight Returns. I'll give them a third Dark Knight Returns. The curls and evil mustache and... writes horror across a piece of paper in giant letters and sits down and watches A Dame to Kill For like 20 times. And
so, yeah, there's
Frank Miller things.
Yeah, this is such a busy Fortnite. There's lots of other little things that came out. Like we saw that James McAvoy shaved his head to play Professor X. We've seen what the Suicide Squad looks like, and it's actually not terrible.
Although you gotta love the look on Will Smith's face. So someone added some great text over it of what he might be thinking, like, wow, my feet hurt. I don't know who these people are. I miss being the Fresh Prince.
When you say you want to do a superhero movie but never heard of the supergroup was one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, it's let me see here.
I'm so sad to be in that picture.
Here, let me pop up my camera angle here and see where it is.
But, it's just...
Look at how sad he looks. He does not...
When you want your freedom, but the warden's attached an explosive collar to your neck.
Yeah. I love that he's right next to Harley Quinn, looks so excited.
Well, it's because Margaret Robbie, like, okay, so... At least visually, I really like her as Harley Quinn.
I do too. She looks great, and from what she was in Hustle, I think it was what she was in Will Smith with another movie recently.
Her outfit looks like a punk rock version of Harley's civilian clothes from Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah,
I'm with it. I could deal without the choker that says Puddin' on it. I mean, maybe just dial the subtlety up a bit.
Well, you know what it is that, yeah, and I agree. It all depends on what stage in Harley Quinn's storyline we get. It's people like I've heard, you know, it's like we have to remember that Harley Quinn has an arc, and we don't know where in the arc this Harley Quinn is. Harley Quinn starts out as, you know, this in an abusive codependent relationship with I don't know if codependent is right, dependent relationship on the Joker, where she's been, you know, abused
the
and controlled.
Back of her jacket says property of the Joker on it.
Right.
So.
Right. And that leads me to think we're going to start out with her on that end of the story, because it's Harley Quinn can be a feminist story, but not at the beginning of her story.
Not at all.
She's not. But that's why her eventual independence from the Joker is triumphant. And that's why it's the empowering story is her breaking away from the Joker. But that does mean that to start her story, she has to be that wound up in him. And I think that's actually a perfectly appropriate place to put her in a movie where the Joker is the antagonist.
And where we're probably going to get a scene where I saw it on Tumblr going around. There's that great scene from the last Suicide Squad movie where there's like a hole in the glass and the Joker's all like, you do realize that's bulletproof, don't you? And Harley says, I know. And she's just, like, firing randomly into the room, and she can't get a good shot, and he makes a comment, why, Harley, if I didn't know any better, I'd say you were trying to kill me. So I hope that scene gets co-opted into the movie.
I was about to say, if they should really draw a bit from the animated Suicide Squad movie. Yeah, Assault on Arkham, because that was actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah. So while it's true, I will always lament any version of Harley Quinn that's not in her like Harley Quinn, Harley Quinn outfit. There,
agreed.
I can say because pronunciation difference. But like, I will always lament any version that's not in that costume. It's this one actually, like, with down like the pigtails, the short shorts, and like it's very similar to the first civilian outfit we ever see her in Batman the Animated Series. So,
lots of good stuff happened this week, but
make the best of it.
Moving on,
we might as well
talk about convention news. Something we do well here at thenerdandtie.com. But a couple weeks ago,
we're the best at it.
A couple of weekends ago, Trey, Nick, and I went to No Brand Con here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I pretty much just walked over there.
Yeah, and it's only here in for you,
right? Because it is literally half a mile, or was literally a half a mile from my apartment. Not so much anymore. But what did you guys think of the con? I enjoyed it. I mean, as I always do with No Brand Con, I thought it was good. It had its iffy moments, but for the most part, it was a good convention.
I spent most of it behind an Artist Alley table, and I am quite happy to say that there were some very, very art-hungry people at this convention. So that was very nice. I got to talk to a lot of really neat folks. The panels that I did get to attend, which were all ones I was hosting or part of, were lots of fun.
Yeah, all the panels you went to were great.
Yeah, all the panels I went to were fantastic. I mean, I was running them, but, you know, I had a lot of fun. I always have fun at No Brand Con. It's one of my favorite parts of the year, and this was no exception. I'm really happy. Really, it was really fun selling art there. Hope to do it again.
Yeah, I had a good time. It was weird for me. This was I'm a co-founder of No Brand Con, and this is the least I've ever been involved in the event was this year. I still kind of technically function as advisory staff, where I make recommendations and things like that. But I don't actually like actively work the event anymore. For me, it's strange. I mean, this is the last year that the convention is going to be in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and this is a thing that I built with a bunch of my friends back in like out from nothing. When we were like in our early 20s, and I'm 34 now, so you can do some math. And I had a lot of fun. It's going to be interesting as it finds its new home in the Wisconsin Dells next year. It is sad that Eau Claire is losing its convention, but it had to for growth. And I think we discussed the hell out of that during the live episode. Where we were there and answering all the questions no one had answered yet.
Being treated by the way, like a closing I am ceremonies. Not in, and have never been a member of the No Brand Con staff. I just wanted to.
Yeah, I will say out. If there's anybody who hasn't listened to that live episode, oh my God, go back and listen to it. It is our most off the rails, amazing episodes we have ever done. It is hilarious. And, I believe should be the template for all future live episodes.
I really need to stop telling people that are going to be attending that panel that, yeah, I've got an hour if you want to grab a drink with me in the bar, because what ends up happening is that everybody that I invite buys me a drink at the bar.
Archimedes points out that
drink
he was
them, though, my friend.
Archimedes says he would know Brand again, and he was there too with handwritten notes and everything in the
chat. Yeah, you wrote a Ken Burns Civil. I have it saved on my phone. That thing looked like it was out of Ken Burns' Civil War.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was perfect. The only thing it was missing was Dearest Mother.
I wanted to whip out my violin and start playing the Ashokan Farewell. I mean, that's...
I just wished at the time that like I had been prepared for Civil War stuff, and I could have like pulled out like actual like Civil War music instead of like Spanish guitar. But you know, now we have an official letters theme song, though.
That's true for the future. So, but no, I had a lot of fun at No Brand Con. It did have its hiccups. There were a few moments that I thought were a little bit strange, a little bit out there, but the staff handled it really well.
Yeah.
And as always, I mean, you can't really complain about No Brand Con because it is what it is. It's a fun convention.
It is Wisconsin's longest running anime convention.
It is Wisconsin's longest running anime convention, and I'm sure they're going to do decently well in the Dells.
It is a great line on my resume. No,
Right? Tell me about
it. See, this is why those kids need to keep doing a good job to make me look good. Their hard work makes me look good. Right?
I'm happy with it. I guess that I hope to do it again. I also had fun because I've been going to No Brand for so long. I mean, you know, I was going to No
Since
Brand
since you were a wee little Nikazumi.
It's true. I think my first No Brand was when I was like 14 years old. And then I skipped 2 years, and then I came back at 17, and I've just been regularly going. And it was weird, like, I catching up with all these people who have known me since I was a teenager.
So was it like No Brand Con 4 your first, or 3?
What? I actually went to No Brand Con 2 was my first No Brand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, jeez. But it was still on campus. I went to that one.
Because the first 3 were on campus.
And then 2006 was the first one I cosplayed at, which is the one that most people remember me from.
Yeah, it's Summer Con 5. That was the first year at the Ramada.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's
the year I did a dance-off with Topher during the cosplay intermission.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was a ridiculously stupid moment.
That was, you know, I've got to say, that was probably the highlight of my weekend was being part of the intermission entertainment.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, we did good. A really good stand-up.
That's very
set.
Nice for you.
I'm sorry, Trey. Guarding the Ninja there anyway. You don't even go to the cosplay contest.
Actually, my character's secret identity is well known.
No, Brand Con 2005 actually was also the first cosplay contest I was in.
Yeah.
I was there. It was terrible. My Edward Elric coat that I made by seam ripping a pocket off of a store-bought lab coat and dyeing red. It was
it was pretty bad.
It was terrible.
I didn't want to tell you.
I still have it down here. It's awful.
I knew it was bad then.
Was that the year
you and Jesus entered as like a two-person group?
No. That coat is really nice. I still have that one too. That was one that Jesus made both of those coats.
Okay.
And those ones are really nice. And
because I remember one of your coats had like the flyaway strings coming off of it everywhere.
Yeah. That was the first version.
Okay.
Version 2 was the movie version, which was the very next year, which was That was the one I actually took second place advanced for.
Yeah, I know. I was there.
And then the one with Jesus was actually a really obscure one. It was the costume that Ed only wears in the first 2 episodes of the original TV series. That is the only time he wore that costume.
Yeah. The funny thing, like, you know, it's so weird to hear you talk about this stuff because I remember all of these entries from like the like host point of view.
You poor thing.
Like, I remember going, man, that coat is so terrible. And going, like, I gotta be nice to this kid who is like a kid. I'm a much nicer person in person than I am in my head. Can I just say that? Like,
can we put that, like, is it, like, I want to put a picture of Trey up on the website now, just that line underneath him. I'm a much nicer person in person than I am in my head. Trey. Great quotes from Trey.
Those are good times. So,
but No Brand was a lot of fun this year.
Everyone's first cosplay is horrendous, though. That's just a fact.
Next year, of course, it's at the
Chula Vista Dells. Yeah, you should really not look at version 1 of my Klingon outfit. Yeah.
We got to find it.
Well, it's been dismantled.
My first cosplay was actually a Harlequin cosplay. Thank you very much.
Harlequin or a Harley Quinn?
Harley Quinn. Not even kidding. There are, like, you can find it on Facebook for the Dark Knight. Myself and my then fiance, she was the Joker and I was Harley Quinn.
Ariel from the Little Mermaid costume.
Oh man, you know, right? Not quite as good as that, but still pretty good. And by pretty good, I mean it was terrible. A lot of duct tape was involved in that. A lot of duct tape.
Okay, so moving
for
on.
The costume.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Trey, where are you going to be next weekend?
So next weekend, I'm actually going to be at Anime Central in the Chicago area, in Rosemont, Illinois. It's going to be.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Prove it.
Improbable.
I will take photos while I'm there.
Yeah, until then, I don't believe you, Trey.
I'm currently listed on the ASEN website in the list of Artist Alley participants.
No, I don't believe anything I read on the internet, Trey. I don't even believe us.
Okay, good to know. So I'm going to be in the Artist Alley, I believe table EO8, in the massive Artist Alley, and you should stop by and find me.
Buy his stuff.
And you should also find Balnibari Productions, because they are also an awesome person. And you should find Ocelot Dude Designs, because she's also awesome. And they will also be in the Artist Alley at various other places in the hall. So, yeah.
You know what you should do if you're listening to this podcast and you're going to ASEN? You should take a selfie with each of them and submit it to us. And we'll mention your name on the podcast. Think of it like a scavenger hunt.
Yes. Yes, if you go to ASEN, try to take photos with all three of those tables, and we will even, like, we will put it up on the website. We will put those photos up on the website, and we will tell people you're awesome.
But you need all three of them.
You need all three. You need the full set.
Yep. Got to catch them all.
You got to get me, you got to get Bal Flanagan, and you got to get Gen Proc. No table mates, no people covering their tables. It's got to be the real people.
Yep, it's got to be them. Send all three to us at Nerd and Tie.
Send it to the tips. Go to send it to the because you need to be able to attach the photo. Send it to tips at nerdandtie.com with the subject line Anime Central Trinity.
Anime Central Trinity?
Sure.
That works. Sure. Why not? But you do all that, we'll put your picture up on the website and we'll give you a big hurrah and it'll be great.
All right. So we should move on to the mailbag.
To the absolute like novel of letters that we have this week, Fortnite. I say week because we've done four shows in a row. Like 4 weeks in a row.
Oh my god, we have this is 4 weeks in a row.
So it feels so like
let's get the sexy music going.
All right, I'm going to start with a couple of letters from Paul Langland.
Oh, yeah. Langland wrote in.
First letter, Paul writes, subject, no brand con. Hey, fellow nerds in your ties, because Trey is probably not wearing pants.
I am wearing pants.
I want to say I did enjoy no brand con. Don't stand up. Oh, okay. Well, there we go. I want to say I did enjoy no brand con, despite it being the last one in Eau Claire. I like that the behavior was relatively kept at bay. My two buddies I dragged along enjoyed it too. Anyways, I had fun seeing all three of you there. Fur, your otaku tonight was awesome. Thank you, Langland. Match game was good too. I wish I could have stayed longer on Sunday, but I had to work. Overall, it was a good con, and I hope to come back next year and enjoy it even more. Incidentally, I noticed my voice is kind of like smooth jazz on the live podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I probably will have another letter about the second Avengers movie from Langland, just Langland. He did indeed have a second letter.
Well, he
didn't let us down.
What do you know?
And the seventh was Avengers Age of Ultron, as was foreshadowed in the first letter, if you were paying attention. And he writes, again, hey guys, again. So I checked out the movie and it was awesome. I took a page out of Trey's playbook, and I saw it at the local drive-in just outside of Shatak and Cameron. They have a drive-in up there?
Apparently. Weird. I just knew about the Eau Claire one.
Weird. I didn't realize that Shatak had one. Weird. Anyway, it was awesome. The food was good and reasonably priced. The drive-in was kind of small but secluded in the woods, as most things are in Shatak and Cameron.
Where you can get murdered.
Anyways, time to get on with the movie. Stan Lee had an awesome cameo, as always. I always love seeing the heroes work together as a group. I noticed that Rogers and Stark show much friction which hints future events. The action and plot never seems to disappoint. I really like this movie. It was good. I'm looking forward to Ant-Man now. That looks good. There is stuff that is that happened in the movie that I'm skeptical of, but I won't spoil it for anyone who's not seen it yet. This movie is probably going to be being the movie of the summer for sure. That's all I got. Peace out, bros. Mr. Langland. Thank you, Langland, for your letters.
Thank you, Langland. I believe you in everything that you wrote, that you wrote it.
I didn't doubt one thing because you told us you were going to see the movie and send us a letter, and you did. So
the movie and send us a letter.
Yeah, see the movie, send us a letter.
Which, spoiler, Arkhamai said he was going to write about the movie and then didn't.
Yeah, wow. Who does that make the better person, Arkhamai?
So Langland is better than Arkhamai is what we've learned this episode.
Explain yourself in the chat, Arkhamai. I can't wait to hear what you've
got. Arkhamai has dropped out of the chat, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was there.
He'd be exposed. He would be exposed in the world.
Oh, dear.
And he hid.
So moving on to the next letter.
Do I want to read Worms right away then?
No. In the order that they're in the chat is the good order to read them.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to read a letter from Brenda. We have this letter from Brenda Gibner. Subject, Avengers Awesome. Hello, Nerd and Ty from hot Tucson, Arizona. So got three things to go over in this email. First, loved the live podcast. It was so funny, and I can sympathize about a con moving. The one I worked for did that a couple of years ago. Yes, the live podcast was excellent.
And it was actually really funny.
That was my favorite.
It was enjoyable.
So back to that. Second, I know you guys saw Ultron on Saturday, but it was also free comic book day. Did you guys do anything for that? I was with the charity group I'm a part of, Arizona Tardids, at a local store here called Heroes and Villains. It was pretty cool, and we had other groups like the 501st and Arizona Dreads. I did not do anything for Free Comic Book Day because, in truth, I knew I wasn't going to buy any books, and so I didn't want to take any of the free ones at my local comic book shop because I buy all my comics digitally, and I know that local shops have to pay for those issues that they give out for free, so I would rather that those free issues go to people who are actually going to give money to the shops than to me.
I actually was not around a comic book store on Saturday, so I was unable to participate, but I will be going there to my local comic shop this coming Wednesday to pick up the new issue of Squirrel Girl. So,
yeah.
I'm a regular at my local shop. I went there. I picked up a whole lot of books. I only feel bad because I was going to do like a recap of what I thought of some of them, and I never got to type that up. But I will say, like, nothing too fancy. I just read what some of the new stuff coming out. Can't wait for all new, all different Avengers. It is my favorite Avengers team lineup in pretty much ever, mostly because Kamala Khan's on the team. Yeah. Uh-huh, and it's the greatest thing ever. And her interacting with Miles Morales is going to be awesome. It's just going to be awesome.
That's right. She's officially an Avenger now.
Yes. Yeah, she's on a team with Miles and the new Nova and new Captain America and new Thor. And I'm not actually sure who's in the Iron Man suit, but Vision's there. And it's great.
So I'm going to finish this letter.
Sorry.
Lastly, we saw Ultron on Friday, and it was so good. The story seemed a bit rushed, but the humor was great. Do you think, and spoilers, we cannot read on the podcast, because people listening to this episode may not have seen Age of Ultron yet. So,
But we can answer your question,
We can answer
Brenda.
Your question without giving any context. We're going to each answer that question, and...
Trey, why don't you start?
Yes.
I think maybe.
I think for sure down. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Down. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Because custody. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go. In other words, what I believe that we saw on screen is what happened.
Indeed.
All right. So
I've learned to never like believe anything I see in a Joss Whedon written thing.
Yeah, but the studio interfered with this one so much that I'm, yeah.
Well, and with a franchise like this, you have to assume that even in the least amount of studio interference that they have yay or nay say on any major thing like that, and they approved and have said outside of the thing that the thing is the thing is the thing which is the thing.
Got it. I mean, probably.
I said Coulson coming back wasn't even his call, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably, Brandon.
Anyways,
probably.
So, why don't you take the next one?
Sure. We have a letter from Andrew Worm, and Worm writes to us and with the subject, Ultron's design. In the Age of Ultron roundtable, Raina and Ascenti mentioned how upset she was with Ultron's design, how it still had mandibles and such. I saw the movie again last night with this in mind, and I can safely say that Stark actually did not design the Ultron body. This film is really quickly paced in the first act, and it's just a quick shot. But when Stark first enters a secret room with Loki's staff, he stops in front of an unfinished robot. You can clearly see that it's the Ultron we see for most of the movie. Similarly, the other Ultron bodies were designed by Hydra as well. This is explained when after Thor destroys the Ultron body in the Avengers Tower, we then cut back to the secret room in Sokovia with all the lights switching on while Stark While Stark may have designed the Ultron AI, Hydra designed the Ultron body. I have a feeling this will be touched on in Ant-Man. We all know that Darren Cross in Yellow Jacket is the bad guy in the movie, and I don't think it's that much of a stretch to learn that he was working with Hydra on the robots we see in the Hydra base in Sokovia. Plus, that could actually bring it back to Hank Pym and Ultron. Actually, who knows? The movie does a poor job of explaining the opening act's plot, and I think it was left on the cutting floor. Apparently, the early cuts of the film were over 3 hours, and I think a lot of that was exposition in the first act, which would have helped alleviate a lot of the concerns people have with it. Oh well, time will tell. Sorry for the length of this letter, guys. Signed, Worm. Worm, yeah. I'd never thought of that before you wrote to us. That is a phenomenal letter, and you are probably absolutely right.
Yeah, so I watched Age of Ultron again last night, and and first off, I'll say I enjoyed the film a heck of a lot more the second time when I stopped wanting it to be a different movie and I just let it be the movie that it was. But it's there's actually a lot of stuff that I understood better in that first. Like, you'll notice that we didn't censor this one for spoilers only because all the spoilers he says are in the first third of the movie.
Slash the trailer.
Yeah. But so there's a sequence that I thought was all in the same day that if I had paid attention to the like two lines of dialogue told me that it was like took over 3 days. And so like that made certain things make a lot more sense for, you know, how things happen, but it's super rushed. And if you missed one or two lines, a lot of it doesn't quite make sense. And yeah, it's the victim of hacking of, you know, and also there were, I know that there's famously a lot of arguments between Joss Whedon and Marvel as to which bits they should cut. So there were like effectively two different voices editing this film.
It shows the problems that come with creation by committee. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, and that's just what unfortunately the Marvel Cinematic Universe was. And that's why Edgar Wright couldn't work out on the Ant-Man movie was because the first Ant-Man script was written before the MCU was really created, and which is why Joss Whedon has lamented letting Edgar Wright go because he had said that the Ant-Man script was really one of the best scripts that he's ever read, but it really had nothing to do with the greater plan that Marvel had for their movies.
And there's a lot of stress in working in these movies, which is why I think that the TV people who are used to a more collaborative situation are doing better. That's why I think the Russo brothers are really good fit for what they're doing. And that's why Whedon actually did, like, Age of Ultron is a good movie. Like, I want to be clear, I really did like this movie. It just wasn't as good as some of the earlier installments in the franchise, and it wasn't as good as the first Avengers. That doesn't make it bad. I still think it was really good. And
following up, I didn't actually hate the movie. There were a lot of problems with it. That doesn't mean that I don't like it.
Yeah.
But so, I'm used to people not getting that because I'm a YouTube critic.
Well, it's the problem is that, you know, we're critical people and we can come off sounding more negative than we intend, and then Fur just loves everything because he's a sucker.
Hey, remember I was the first one to complain about Age of Ultron on the special last week.
That's only because we let you talk really early.
True.
All right, so let's move on to the next letter. And it is from Raina Innocenti, who happened to have been on the previous episode.
Oh, what do you know?
Of Too Many People. Subject, get hype. Message, Ant-Man.
Hill?
That is all.
Hell yeah.
I'm not even kidding, guys.
I'm so excited. You know, if there's anything that I think might be movie of the summer, Ant-Man is shaping up to be that for me.
Well, it's so weird because we've been, and we mentioned this in the pre-show, I mentioned it at least, it feels like Marvel's kind of like reaching like a really kind of a dark point. Obviously, it's going to get darker with Civil War coming up, but it's just really nice to have a movie where like the lead person is like saying like, no, because I'm Ant-Man. Yeah, I didn't pick the name either. Like,
well, it's, well, you know, here's the thing though. Marvel, even at its darkest, is still brighter than the brightest DC movie. Like, yeah, Age of Ultron is like Age of Ultron and Winter Soldier. Like, our Winter Soldier and Age of Ultron are like the two darkest movies they've put out, really. Well, and Iron Man 3, but all of them are like leaps and bounds brighter films than like
anything in Man of Steel.
And that's freaking Superman. That's supposed to be like hope, the image of hope.
It's what his thing on his chest stands for.
Stands for hope. You know, you can't just say that and then not follow, and then like, it also stands for arbitrarily destroying cities and not caring about civilian life lost.
I gotta say, like, don't you think that was like one of the biggest, I don't know if we got mentioned in last week's podcast, but I was thinking about this and how that is like the biggest sort of like, forget you to DC, how like there's a city that's about to be destroyed. And they could be like, yeah, we can destroy it now, and everybody will be fine, and the world will be saved. But Captain America's like, no, we have to get every single person off this island.
Well, and yeah, it's
reasons I like Captain America. Yeah, and, number 7,000.
And it's, you know, also just go to the first Avengers where the city's like getting attacked and like they're evacuating the civilian population. Uh-huh. Or, you know, but okay, so I think
they're
the secret is
not letting it turn into this giant thing.
I think the secret is that Superman never finished explaining the S stands for hope thing. It stands for hope, which is an acronym for Hella Offensive People Executor. Nick, take us into the next letter.
Wonderful. Oh, perfect.
So anyway, next up, we got to the letter, a couple letters from my man, Archimize. Archimize for subjects for moms. Hey, nerds and ties and their mothers. Happy Mother's Day to you guys. Figured I'd keep it short with this one. So, just a few questions for the team. Onely, what are some of your favorite mothers in anime, comics, and or TV that people might not know about? Thule, what anime, do we want to take it one by one, or?
We can take it one by one.
Yeah, let's take
one by one. First, some characters who people don't often think of, I guess.
All right, favorite mothers in anime, comics, and, my favorite mother in all of comics is Alfred.
Yeah.
Okay.
What? He fixes up the suit, he takes care of him, he brings him cookies. Alfred's Batman's mom.
Oh, man.
I like Ultimate Aunt May. That is, like, as in from the Ultimates universe. She is, she's a middle-aged woman. She's fully aware that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And she is supportive of him. She has his back. She talks to him. She understands what he goes through, and she's even an active agent in fighting off the Sinister Six when Peter makes his best stand in his last stand in Death of Spider-Man, which is one of my favorite Ultimate books, one of the only Ultimate stories I absolutely love.
Not to be confused with 616 Aunt May, who at one point dated Doc Ock.
Yeah, not to be confused with her at all. Very, very different character. Was one of the reasons why I was really offended in Amazing Spider-Man 2 when Aunt May's asking Peter about, well, why do you need to look up your parents so bad? And Peter's like, well, I mean, you, Aunt May, you and Uncle Ben were here for me, but they were my parents. Like, it's like, shut up. You're an idiot. I really just like the relationship in that book, and I like that the character continued to grow even after Peter died. So, yeah.
Yeah, I tried to think about anime series moms, and then I realized, like, all the anime series I really watched a lot of, most of them had dead moms or absentee
had dead moms.
Bad
moms.
Because,
like, Ranma's mom's alive. She's just not there.
There's some anime where there was a mom that I absolutely adore, and I just can't remember who the character is right now. So I guess I can't
I think the best mom, of course, is Unit 1.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Evangelion Unit 1, obviously, but
I'm gonna throw a wild card on mine and say it, and like one you don't really think about or hear about. Aunt Lily from Pushing Daisies.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Who if you watch the show, sorry if this spoils it for anybody, who if you turned out you find out is actually Chuck's mom in the show. She's
okay.
Kind of a badass. So
Because I haven't watched that show in like a really long time.
I just started rewatching it with a girlfriend. I got her into the show.
Have you watched Wonderfalls yet?
No, because I don't think you can find that online anywhere, and I'd have to get the DVD from somebody.
It's not online. Well, you know what it is that, you know, I'm realizing the first time I watched it was on my disc plan on Netflix.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you have a disc plan on Netflix?
I do not.
Add it for a month. No.
And grab like Dead Like Me while I'm at it and everything else too.
Yeah.
Have a Brian Fuller marathon. Jesus.
We have plenty more questions in this letter.
We do.
Let's keep going. Roll with it.
Julie. What anime comic or TV series do you enjoy watching with your mom or think they might enjoy?
I actually
have a couple answers for this one, believe it or not.
I used to watch Farscape with my mom when I was in high school.
Did she like it?
She thought it was okay.
My mom and I actually had a really... Anyone who knows me, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on it on the podcast, but anyone who knows me knows I have a really interesting and very complicated relationship with my mother. But we're still very close. And one of the things that I really enjoyed is that she got into a lot of the stuff that I really enjoyed talking about and wanted to have some good conversations about. My mom really enjoyed Watchmen. She read Watchmen, and we had a really interesting discussion about that book and the implications of it. And actually the same story with both the Rurouni Kenshin OVAs and Evangelion. My mom and I had some really interesting discussions about Evangelion and especially Asuka's character arc.
Some of my most embarrassing moments as a teenager were when my parents would be in the room while I was watching anime. Especially if I was like, if they were watching the movie with me and I had never seen it before, and then something happens that you're like, oh god, I'm watching this with my mother. but actually, I should say that like I watched all of my parents. My parents are kind of unique where they're not really nerds at all, but they both were big fans of Doctor Who and Star Trek. So. As a kid, it's I watched a lot of Doctor Who and a lot of especially a lot of Star Trek with my family. Like it was appointment viewing in my household, where the whole family would watch. Like when Star Trek: The Next Generation was new, and when Deep Space Nine was new, and when Voyager was new, up until like I left for college, while Voyager was on, we used to watch every it was the thing that where like we'd all sit down and watch Star Trek together. And it was everyone except my brother who would play Nintendo because he didn't really care for the show. It's really funny because my parents aren't really into any of the other geeky stuff I'm into, but they've watched every episode and every Star Trek movie. And like it was when New Who came out, and it was like a year before it came to the United States. Mm-hmm. Like. You have to remember, New Who came out in 2005, but it didn't come to the U.S. until 2006. And so I went and pirated all of Doctor Who for my parents.
Nice.
And we just lost a little bit of that on the backup recording, but the primary recording's still going, so we're going to assume that we don't have to stop.
All right. Okay. Well, I remember when Heroes was on, my mom actually really – like each week we would sit down and watch Heroes. That was something she would actually watch with me and seemed to really enjoy. And the only good memory I have of Star Wars: The Phantom Menace was that my mom took me to see that the day that it came out. Like, I was one of the first people in the theater, and my mom was there with me watching it.
Wow.
So, like, that was that's a cool memory that I have.
That
like,
is really cool.
The only good memory I have of that movie is that I was there. Like, my mom, who really didn't know anything about Star Wars, didn't really, like, I mean, like, I'm sure she saw it when she was little, but, like, she was there with me watching the new Star Wars movie, and so that was pretty cool.
I did remember what my anime answer was. I just want to throw that out real quick from the first one. Great character. Sakura Kinomoto's mom from Cardcaptor Sakura. Just do yourself a favor and just watch the 7th episode of that show. You don't need any other context. That episode works on its own. You'll understand what I'm talking about.
So we should move on to that last point in the letter.
Yep. Which, Trey, you actually kind of summed up pretty well. What anime, comics, or TV series did your mom introduce you, did your mother introduce you to that really stuck with you?
Yeah, and I kind of mentioned mine.
I don't know. My mom was never really the super geeky one in my family, but she was the first person to explain to me what a robot was, which, pretty much colored the rest of my entire existence. So, it's your fault, Mom. I love you.
How about you, Fur?
You know, she didn't really introduce me to anything. Like, she was always working really hard and doing stuff. And I guess I don't know. She didn't really introduce me to anything that all of my nerdy stuff I had to find really on my own, I guess. So, I don't really have anything, I guess, for that.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, he wraps up this letter with, "Thanks, team, and have a great fortnight. P.S. Shout out to your mom. Moms on air. They love that."
Yeah. Hey, shout out to my mom. Happy Mother's Day. Love you, Mom.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I'm glad you enjoyed
raised the legend.
I taught my mom Wii Bowling.
And I want to point out, I actually put the two letters from Arkhamize in the wrong order in the rundown.
Oh well. I like that. That would have been a good one to leave off on.
Yeah, because we totally got the, like, I made a mistake and I meant to put them in the other order. But
way to go!
So that's a week before that, Arkhamize wrote us, Nick.
Yeah, sorry. That's okay. All right. So last one. Shows out loud. Hey, nerds who watch Ties. What? I'm just an hour away from seeing Age of Ultron, so I will likely have another message with thoughts after that.
No, you don't!
No, he didn't.
There was nothing about Ultron in that other letter.
But I wanted to get this one to you.
Unless his mom's Ultron.
Oh, God! That would answer... No, but if that's the case, then Ultron makes amazing cookies, because Arkhamize's mom makes, like, the best cookies ever, just for the record.
For some reason, really it bothers me that you've been hanging out with Arkhamize's mom.
No, she sends, like, every time she visits, she sends cookies. It's so weird. I've never actually met Arkhamize. Guys, I've never met Arkhamize's mom, so she might be Ultron. I don't know. Arkhamize, have you been lying to me?
Anyway, if you would like to Photoshop Ultron making cookies, please, oh God, do it and send it to us.
All right. I wanted to get this one out to you. As Nick can tell, live chatting with him, the events of Gotham has been very enjoyable. But sadly, the show recently finaled, which, by the way, Arkhamize, please, for the love of God, start a blog with your live thoughts of Gotham episodes. Maybe start if they do it next season, because it's the funniest thing that I read, and it's one of the highlights of my week. Please do it. He's very funny.
It would make a great Tumblr.
Oh my God, it would make a perfect Tumblr. I mean, like, I wish I could think of some good samples offhand of some of the stuff that he's described, but, like, just the insanity of that show is so much funnier when you don't say it in, when you don't try to put any pomp and circumstance around it and just say, Babs walks home and finds two kids living in her apartment. And she's like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's amazing. Please, please, Archimize, make a Tumblr about that. I was curious, what are some of the shows that you cannot keep quiet about and have fun and have more fun commenting on than actually watching the show? Thanks, team. I'll take my answer off the air.
Oh, that means we don't have to answer it. Like, do people not understand that that joke doesn't make sense on the podcast because it means we just won't answer it on the show if we actually did that?
Yeah.
Do you people not know how radio works? Worm's done that joke, too.
Talk to you again post-Ultron. Well, he did talk to us, just not about Ultron.
But, if I can go first, I'd say the only show that I'm watching that I genuinely don't like, but I keep watching, is Scorpion, or as I like to call it, End of Scorpion, because it the opening credit is like a close tag. It is close tag Scorpion. It means everything that happens after it is not Scorpion. And it's just, it's not a good show, but I watch it. I've been watching it because I watch it while I work on other things. But it's their science is terrible. They are this weird, you know, kind of trying to push out there the whole, like, being smart makes you antisocial or some weird crap like that, which, like, doesn't make any sense. And it's based off of the fraudulent, non-existent life of this guy. The real Walter O'Brien pretty much lied about everything he's ever done and ever happened to him. And there's some really interesting articles out there. I think Valleywag and Tech Dirt wrote some write-ups about this, about how pretty much everything about the real-life Scorpion is made-up bullshit.
I don't have any shows that I watch right now like that. There were shows that I watched for comedy. Like,
yeah, because I stopped watching Gotham.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I did that a bit with Gotham, but then I got Archimize describing it to me real time, which was honestly funnier and a better use of my time.
Well, it's because for the most part, if I don't really like a show, I stop watching it altogether. I mean, Scorpion was entertaining enough that I could still hate watch it, but something has to be like likable enough to watch.
There were Swamp Thing the series. I will do that with. I'll go rewatch episodes and I just laugh very hard at those.
I don't know.
And oh wait, no, I take that back. I did that with the last. We did that with as it was coming out.
We actually couldn't hear what you watched.
Valve Rave the Liberator. Show that I hate watched. And then it paid. Oh, I'm sorry. It was Valve Rave the Liberator. That was the last show that I hate watched. So I stopped. So the last time I hate watched something, it featured a graphic rape scene to pay me back. So now I'm afraid to hate watch. Thanks.
Yeah. Although, don't hate watch anime because there's effed up stuff in bad anime.
Although, who
There's
knows?
There's stuff in good anime that then becomes not good.
Archimize and I are kind of hate-watching Gundam Reconquista of G, so maybe I'll end up having more to do with that. I guess I do have something that I'm hate-watching right now. It's Gundam Reconquista of G.
Nothing right now because I'm with my new job. I've only just recently been able to start watching things again. But I remember when True Blood was running. Oh, my God.
See, my sister watched that show unironically.
I couldn't stand it. It was terrible. Every week, something awful would, like, more awful than the last week would happen. Yet I couldn't look away.
It looked really bad.
It was so bad. It just, none of these, why are any of these characters doing any of these things? It's so terrible. But, no, True Blood was that for me, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that did we answered the question there?
We did.
All right. So
that's it for mailbag. Thank you guys.
Yeah, and I do want to mention one thing that it's not a mailbag, but we did a couple episodes ask people if they ran conventions, if they ever wanted us to plug their convention, they should send in the information, and we would totally plug it whether we had ever gone there or not or knew anything. And a convention asked us to plug them, and so I'm going to plug them now, and that is the Pensacola Comic Convention in Pensacola, Florida, which is being held August 8th through 9th, 2015. And their website is PensacolaComicCon.com. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So that is totally a convention that is totally happening.
It's going to be great. I hear they have oranges at this convention.
It is going to be great and or terrible. And if you walk around making references to Pensacola Wings of Gold, no one's going to know what you're talking about. Hey, but is the actor who played Spoon going to be there?
But hey, if you go there, tell them Nerd and Ty sent you. And they'll probably look at you real confused like and say, sir, you still have to buy a badge.
Yes. But it's totally a convention. It is totally happening. So we, if you have a convention that you would like to see plugged, please contact us and we will totally say it on the podcast. And yeah.
We want to spread the love all over the place.
Moving on to our final segment. Our final segment that we end every episode with, which is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is really simple. What it is that every episode I read a section of a book. And the challenge to you, the home listener, is to tell me what book I've read from. All you have to do is send in the title and the author. Now, if you guess right, what happens is you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, you get your name read aloud every episode, every regular episode of the podcast, so any episode that's not a special. Two, you get your name listed in the Hall of Awesome on our website.
Oh, yeah.
Three, nothing else. My God, we're giving you a lot already.
Seriously, you want us to shell out cash for this? My God.
No, I'm reading random stuff. You could be like, I don't know.
Read a book.
All right, so the people currently in the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Archimize Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, and Lily Soros. Tongue-tied. All right, so Lily Soros. I almost called her Lily Soros because I don't know. Lizard, maybe, with the Soros thing at the end. Those are the people currently in the Hall of Awesome. Now, two regular episodes ago, I read a section of a book. I did not read any of it last episode, only because I did not bring it with me to No Brand Con, but we're going to read another random sentence of that book.
Nobody got it right.
Nobody's gotten it right yet.
Yeah.
The line is as follows. In the future, we will reach the limits of etching on silicon wafers. If you know what book that is from, go to nerdandtie.com, click on contact, and fill out the contact form and tell us what the book was. Or if you have any other feedback and you've heard our massive mailbag section this episode, you want us to read your words and respond to you, also go to that contact form and send it to us. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your dreams. Tell us why you think that pink is the prettiest color that fur could ever wear on the show.
Just gonna kind of do one of these.
It's all important. It is all dream worthy. It is all part of the hopes, dreams, and days and visages that come with you, and the dreams upon.
What are you doing?
What are you talking about? What is going on anymore?
And as always, if you have any tips about any news stories that you'd like to share to us, please send it to us at tips@nerdandtie.com.
I was filling time so I could cue up music.
Do it.
So, this is where we should end the show.
Oh, yes, I agree.
I'm Trey Dorn, and
I'm Professor Fursters.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
And remember, you can always rate and review Nerd and Tie on both Stitcher and iTunes, and you should subscribe to us on those services. And so, be an awesome human being. And Nick, say your catchphrase.
Keep on spockin' in the free world.
Good night, everybody!
Good night, everybody!
Good night, everyone, except for that guy.